This is Dolph Hyken, and I want to share some really exciting news with you. Beginning Wednesday, August 14th, my Saturday night radio program will move to a new day, new time, new station, 6:20 a.m. every Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. For a full hour, we will continue to discuss timely topics and current issues, and as always, we will talk to outstanding guests regarding stimulating, compelling, and often controversial items of interest. So join me Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, beginning August 14th, for a new edition of the Dolph Hyken Show. You won't want to miss it.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Zev Brenner. We have with us Elliot Spitzer, former governor of New York. He's running for controller. I think the last time you were on the broadcast was about 10 years ago in the Catskills, if I remember correctly.
That sounds about right, and we had a good time.
Absolutely, and we look forward to having you back not only tonight, but on future broadcasts as we get closer to election time. How's the campaign coming along for you?
It is great. You know, it, for obvious reasons, it's been a few years since I've been out on the campaign trail, and I forgot how much I enjoyed it. It's hard work. Anybody who thinks that politics isn't hard work is mistaken. If you're doing it well, you're talking to voters, whether it's a subway station, a breakfast, on a radio show, you're doing hard work to persuade the public to be supportive and to figure out what can make a difference. So it's hard work, but it's great fun. There's an energy to it, and it's a thrill every day.
And you resigned about a year and a half ago. At what point did you say, I want to run for office again?
Well, look, it was 5 years ago. And it,
5 years, okay.
So it took a while, and I love public service. The years I had as Attorney General and Governor were about as rewarding as anything I can imagine doing in the public sphere. Obviously, I'm talking about my children and family life. But it took a while before I began to think and ask the question whether I would indeed want to venture back into the political arena. It's, as I just said, hard work, but it also takes a bite out of you. And obviously, for me, coming back has brought back some headlines that weren't always easy to read, but that was part of the reinitiation process. But
how do you deal with that? Here you are, things are quiet, well, more or less quiet, because you were on TV and doing different shows that keep growing up what happened in the past. So how was it to be back in the thick of things where they're bringing up everything almost every day?
Well, you need skin as thick as a rhinoceros hide to be in politics. And if you don't have that, you'll let things get to you, and you can't. It's the media is the media, and I never criticize the media, because the job of the media is to hold people accountable. It is to not only ask the questions that I may deem irrelevant, misplaced, or painful, but that's what the media does. It's always been that way, and it's not going to change. So if you get in, you have to know what the rules are and expect it, and brace yourself. But it's been fine, you know, and the campaign's going great. I got to tell you, the response out on the street is overwhelming. Polls, you know, the public polls out there have me winning, which is nice. I take zero for granted in anything in life, and certainly not politics.
Now, are you a changed person since resigning office? You've gone through a lot with your family, the public media scrutiny. Are you a different person than you were when you were governor?
Look, here's how I can best answer that. I think at the age of 54, having gone through what I've gone through, I am certainly a different person than I was when I was elected Attorney General, different person than I was when I was elected governor, which is now 7 years ago. Now, part of that is the natural maturation that any individual goes through. I hope there's a bit of wisdom, thoughtfulness, and sobriety that overtakes us as the years go by. Part of it, of course, is that given the exigencies that affected my life, you step back and you think and you reflect. And so, sure, I'm different. Now, in some ways, I'm also the same. And the public is, I hope, going to see both components of that. I'm the same in terms of having a desire to be in government, do the things I care about. And so the public will see, I think, both components of that.
Now, the process going back, obviously, you've been thinking about it for a while. The papers have reported it. Did Anthony Weiner's entering the race and doing well initially in the polls make it easier for you to re-enter the political scene?
It had no impact on my thought process. I think that, and as I looked at it, the public is forgiven. And that is a good thing. It is a part of our nature. It is something in the human spirit to appreciate that there is error, and there is the opportunity to recover from error. Now, having said that, there, in individual instances, whether the public will choose to be forgiven is a completely different question. And the question that I'm asking of the public is, will you be forgiving of me? And so there are no lessons necessarily to be learned from anybody else's example. It's a very individualized decision for a voter looking at a particular candidate. And so I drew no conclusions, brought no presumptions, thought I would do my best to make a persuasive case. And as I've said, since I got in, I will rest comfortably with whatever the verdict may be on the part of the public. I always had that view. Mm-hmm. When I was a prosecutor, a jury verdict was a jury verdict. And in politics, it's the same thing. A vote is a vote. We have the best decision-making process humankind has ever developed in the jury system and democracy. And the only wise thing to do is to accept those results.
We live in interesting times where everything somebody does is immediately on Twitter, on Facebook, social media. Question I have for you, Elliot, is how much of one's private life when you're running for office should be public, and how much of a role should it play when people choose a candidate?
Look, I've thought about that, obviously. It's a difficult issue for me to address because what I've been through, obviously, it doesn't dictate the outcome, but has a significant impact. I do think, as a community, as a state, a nation, we need to have a conversation about where the boundary line is between private and public. I think the public has a different answer than the media does. The public, just so it's clear, we all like to read the tabloids, but I don't think the public necessarily votes based upon everything it sees in the tabloids. I think the public can appreciate that how one will perform in a job is the most important question. Character relates to that. All these other issues can affect the perception we bring to the table of a person. But I also think the public appreciates there is a zone of privacy that is increasingly hard to maintain. As you point out, Twitter. Whether it's Twitter or the NSA, technology has eroded those zones of privacy that used to exist.
So the question is, in other words, where do you think the boundary should be? What is, do you think is fair play and what is not with it crossing that boundary?
Well, I'm going to wait till I'm not in politics to answer the question, just because I think it would either be look too self-serving or whatever to try to wade in. But I think you're asking the question that, you should get some philosophers, political pundits on the show and ask them, because I think it is an important question. There's also a fascinating conversation to be had about, the history of our politicians and academics and all sorts of folks in private lives and how it does should affect. But I don't think I'm in the best position right now to weigh in on that.
Now, how do you feel the media constantly compares you with Anthony Weiner? How do you feel about that comparison? Because every time one of your names is mentioned, they sometimes mention the other. Many times they mention the other one.
I don't pay a lot of attention to what is in the media that way, because otherwise I'd mm-hmm. be consumed by it. And my job right now is to speak to the public, to try to persuade the public that my qualifications are the ones that will create the best controller of the city of New York. And that single question is the one I want to leave voters with. Who will perform the best as the controller of the city of New York?
By the way, interesting article about you in the Sunday's New York Times, Spitzer's Long Road to Redemption, a nice piece.
Right. I skimmed it again. It's an odd thing to be the subject of psychoanalytical writings that are over there for the general public to read. I kind of feel as though I'm Exhibit A or whatever. But, as you pointed out, when I got in, I knew that would happen. And it's the nature of it. And I made my choice, and here we are.
Is it worse or better than you expected when you entered the fray?
It has been more exciting. I did not, frankly, predict that there would be quite as much media attention that Sunday evening when I called a few reporters and said, by the way, I think I'm running for city controller. It let loose a bit of a firestorm. I didn't predict the magnitude of it. But having said that, you put one foot in front of the other every moment. It was back then a 9-week sprint. It has been exhilarating. I love it. And, we'll see how it plays out.
So then they have the question, why did you wait so long? Because I know you're looking to go
for
a
while. I'll give you an answer to that one, because I have been busy. And over the past 5 years, I've been here running the family business. I have taught at CCNY, which I absolutely love. I have hosted a show on CNN and then on Current. I have written many articles for Slate, the online magazine, which sort of led to a book that came out a couple weeks ago called Protecting Capitalism, which is sort of a sequence of chapters about cases we made and what they stand for as overarching principles, not just the cases. That would be kind of boring, but it's an argument of principles about economics. And then when that process wound down in June, I said, you know what? You could make a run for controller, and that's when I began to think about it seriously.
And no regrets. You're forging full steam ahead.
Absolutely. This is, politics is always a hard business. It always was. I think we live at a moment where we think it must be harder now than it used to be. I'm not sure that's true. I mean, in fact, politics 200 years ago, you know, if you read about the yellow journalism and everything else, it may even have been tougher because slanderous comments were made and you couldn't rebut them. You didn't even see them being made. It's always been a hard business, but I love it. It's exhilarating. There's an adrenaline to it. I not only have no regrets, I'm absolutely thrilled that I'm doing this. And, you know, regardless of the outcome, obviously I have hope for the outcome in one direction, but this is...
Well, the polls show you're doing very well, as you've indicated
before.
Yeah,
no, the polls are wonderful. But you know, polls are like the weather. You know,
they can change tomorrow, right?
You know, right now it's cloudy. We're waiting for the sun to come through. But you know, we'll see where the polls are. There's the old cliche: every candidate who's down in the polls says there's only one that counts on election day. Happens to be true. You know, I happen to be up in the polls, but it's still true. The only one that matters is on election day.
We're speaking with the former governor of New York, Eliot Spitzer, who's running for control. We'll be right back right after these messages.
Tonight's Top Dollar Time is brought to you by the Diamond Dairy Cafe as they celebrate their grand opening. Under new management, located at 4 West 47th Street on the mezzanine level, check out their delicious dairy menu, including soups, salads, fish, sushi, pizza, and so much more. The Diamond Dairy Cafe is under the strict supervision of the Star K. It is also called Yisrael and Pasi Yisrael as well. Open from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. daily, Monday through Thursday, and 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Fridays. Orders, calls 212-997-2260. That's 212-997-2260.
Abdullah time for Shabbat, August 10th. Parshas Shoftim is no earlier than 8:44 p.m.
The Coffee Bar at 345 Central Avenue in Lawrence is the perfect place to take the family, business associate, or date when you're looking for a refreshing and delightful, elegant dining experience. They're open for business from 7:30 a.m. till 10:30 p.m. The Coffee Bar is a fine Italian dairy restaurant with a wonderful and delicious cuisine of pasta, fish, paninis, omelets, and wraps that will have you keep coming back again and again. Of course, their Starbucks coffee and other drinks are second to none. The Coffee Bar at 345 Central Avenue, Lawrence, is Halvia Stroll, Pasta Stroll, and is an ideal place to have a party or shove a breakfast. Open Saturday nights as well for your convenience. For more information, please call 516-791-5200. That's 516-791-5200, The Coffee Bar, 345 Central Avenue in Lawrence.
Increase your bottom line. A new website, company makeover, and logo redesign will help you attract new business. Company Impact will help your company separate from the competition by delivering results that will increase your bottom line. From small business websites to large e-commerce websites, Company Impact's marketing professionals will help take your business or organization to new heights. Discover for yourself their unparalleled customer service and a team that will not fail to please. Company Impact staff is second to none and is here to help and guide you along your upward climb to success. For more information about how you can bring your business to the next level, call 347-946-1757. That's 347-946-1757. Or visit them online at companyimpact.com.
Professional builders and remodelers choose Anderson Windows more than any other brand. And the Woodright double-hung window is one reason why. With rich wood interiors in oak, pine, and maple, low-maintenance exteriors, and authentic traditional styling, the Anderson Woodright Window can make new homes look old and old homes like new.
Stop into Greater Windows and Doors at 1302 60th Street in Brooklyn. You can call them at 718-972-2626.
Traveling to Israel or Europe this summer? Travelcell offers the lowest rates and best service and latest technology for you to stay online and in touch all the time. Short or long term, Travelcell is the only company to rent you an iPhone, iPad, Android, or BlackBerry, or rent a SIM card so you can bring your own device, all at super low rates. With unlimited calling and unlimited email and web. Super combo sale on now. Rent a cell phone and Wi-Fi portable hotspot at 20% off regular rates. Call 877-CELL-PHONE. That's 877-CELL-PHONE. Or log on to TravelCell.com today. TravelCell, the trusted name for over a decade.
It is time when bold knights and bawdy wenches gather to feast and frolic. It is time when the royal court and naughty courtesans mix and mingle. It is time for the New York Renaissance Fair. Come, shed the weight of today and step into our legendary realm. See swords flashing in the sun, hear the ring of steel, and feel the excitement as knights on horses thunder into the arena. Join in the revelry. Shop exquisite crafts and savor your choice of fine food and drink. Join us in the joyful festivities at the Renaissance Fair. Real people, real food, real fun. Live it up at the 36th Annual New York Renaissance Fair.
The New York Renaissance Fair opens Saturdays, Sundays, and Labor Day Monday, August 3rd through September 22nd in Sterling Forest, Tuxedo Park. Buy discount tickets at Walgreens. Performance schedules and other info at renfair.com. Children admitted free this weekend. Coupons at renfair.com. renfair.com.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Zev Brenner, our guest, former New York governor, former attorney general of New York, Eliot Spitzer. He'd like to be the controller of our great city. So the papers reported today, I saw online, that you've been in the, you got one endorsement, I believe, from the Reverend Roderick Merritt of the Tried Stone Baptist Church in the Bronx. I'm curious to know, have you had any rabbis come out to endorse you?
Yeah, you know, I'll say an interesting thing. The church, the ministers in the city are a bit more overtly political, and I have to tread carefully here because I don't think they like, obviously, to be thought of as being political because of their position is non-political in terms of their tax status in terms of the churches, but they are, as voices in their community, more likely to endorse. And I'm not sure, even when I was running for governor, which was a race that where I think I got, almost 70% of the vote, so it was really an easier race just in terms of the mechanics of winning. I don't think I got any formal endorsements from rabbis. I'm not sure I asked because, look, I know many rabbis, and but I'm not sure that a formal endorsement is as frequent in among the rabbinic community.
Well, I know that you have Jewish support. I spoke to some of my Orthodox listeners. They mentioned, for example, Carl Andrews is doing a good job in reaching out to the Orthodox
community. Right. Well, look, I had lunch today with some leaders in the Orthodox community who I think in due course will not only endorse and be supportive, which is great. So, yes, there's no question that I think I have support there. I look forward to that support. It means an enormous amount to me, not only because of my heritage, but just because the Orthodox community is such a vibrant and vital part of New York City.
Right, and growing, and I think they're going to play a very important role in the primary. So I'm curious to know what Jewish support you have right now that you can tell us. You're working on, is it in formation? What status is
it? It is in formation, and it will be very substantial. There will be, I think, by primary day, an institutional presence, and it will be demonstrated quite clearly in both in print and on the radio and in the streets of the communities that are sort of the traditional Orthodox vote. You can look back at the relationship with the Orthodox community when I was Attorney General and then Governor, and the issues that mattered to the Orthodox community. One in particular, the question of how we can properly use government funds to support the school system, the non-public schools that are so essential in the Orthodox community. And the yeshivas were the beneficiaries of some very good and hard work that Avishek, who was one of the senior lawyers in my Attorney General's office, working with David Zweifach and many others in the Orthodox community, kind of asked the question, what does the First Amendment permit? What are the boundary lines? And it's not an easy analytical question, but we came up with answers that permitted and authorized funding that then became, was effectuated, both when I was AG and governor.
So what can we do? Because not only affects the Orthodox community, Catholics, and anybody who sends their kids to parochial school, it's a hot-button issue in New York. And what can we do to provide relief to parents that are engaged in what's double taxation? They're paying taxes entitled to public school education, which is approximately $15,000-$16,000 a year. And on top of that, paying tuition that equals that, in some cases more, double taxation. What can we do to help them?
What can be done is that there are funding streams that can go from government to the non-public schools, the yeshivas in particular, in the case of our community, that can provide money for things such as busing, for mandated services that are required by the state. You can say if you are required to do A, B, and C, certain testing programs, for instance, certain particular pieces of the academic program, then you can provide government funding for those. Now, you can't provide government funding, cannot provide government funding for purely religious education, obviously, but if the boundary line is properly observed, there are ways to increase the government funding streams, and that is what we said in this report that was very widely respected and embraced. It was a careful parsing of First Amendment doctrine that came to the right answer from the perspective of yeshivas in terms of what could be done.
Another hot-button issue also is Matisse with pet oral suction and the rite of circumcision, which has gotten, even though that's not really the controller's bailiwick, but I know every elected official is being asked about it, so I'm curious to get your position on that.
Sure. You know, I've not looked at the issue in as great detail as I will down the road, but I don't say that to avoid answering it. What I think should happen is I think the Department of Health should sit down with the rabbis and then say, What in fact are the measurable health issues, and what are the other possible remedies? Is this a process that should be eliminated? Is this a process where you want to make sure that people are tested before that form of circumcision is done? It is not clear to me that it's necessarily a binary choice. And I say this after speaking to a few of the leaders in the Orthodox community. So again, I think that is an issue that should be pursued. And right now it's a matter in litigation. And that litigation will take some time. My guess is that the next mayor and the next department, health commissioner, will be in a position to revisit the issue and should, you know, then step back and say, okay, let's quantify the health concerns. Are they real? Are they measurable? What are the remedies? What are the possibilities? Need it be quite as absolute as what the current mayor has proposed?
But I think there's one thread that combines almost everything we're talking about, and that is where the boundaries are. The boundaries need to be pushed, whether it's a person's private life, how public it is. If you do circumcision, how much can government intrude?
Right.
That has to do also with the public school versus parochial school. How much, you know, is what's considered religious, not religious? It seems that we're constantly pushing the envelope, and that's really the issue, I think, for a lot of these things that we're talking about.
And what it comes down to is a sense of respect, in my view, for, in the case of privacy, one zone of privacy, and how far, where does that balance take you, or the First Amendment rights of communities, individuals, religions, and where do those boundaries get balanced, and how do you do it? You're right. These are not easy issues that are absolute, and they should not be viewed as being absolute, but it is a matter of respect, judgment calls, and balance, and that is what we need in each case.
Absolutely. And even the mayor, you know, pushing soda bans and other bans, it's also a question of how far does one go.
Right. You know, that was an interesting example where I think many people who were sympathetic to the mayor's underlying belief that, yes, obesity is a major issue that we need to think about and address, nonetheless pulled back and said, wait a minute, I don't want government telling me how big the cup should be from which I drink. That there is, again, a sense of, wait a minute, where do my rights as an individual end, and where does government's intercession properly end? And I think, again, everybody agrees about the health issue, and the mayor deserves a lot of credit for focusing on it and doing a lot about it. I think that boundary line, the courts have felt, perhaps a slightly different reason, but the courts have felt was one step beyond what was appropriate.
Because part of the problem, getting back to Matisse Lopez, and Nat Lewin, a prominent attorney, said on this broadcast the other day that he's not opposed to having the city with that form, but the groups that are fighting it are afraid if they let them challenge them on this issue, there'll be further challenge on other parts of the circumcision of religious values. Again, it's just a question of pushing the envelope.
Exactly.
Now, you've been talked about before the scandal and you had to resign. They've talked about you becoming the first possibly Jewish president in the United States. Is that still something in the cards when you're thinking about? Or?
Look, every time I heard that chatter, I just kind of, you know, it's changed the channel or turned off the radio. Look, the notion way back, oh, first Jewish president, all this and that, I always believed that the only thing I could do was the job that I'd been asked to do. That's how I tried to lead my life. Sometimes it's been spectacular. 8 years as attorney general were beyond description in terms of what we were able to accomplish. Gubernatorial years, we got a great deal done. Didn't end, obviously, the way I had hoped, and make an understatement. But I hope if I can win this election to serve as controller, that is the only thing I aspire to.
But nothing in the back of your mind saying I'd love to be the first Jewish president?
No, what I'd love to be is the next very effective controller of the city of New York.
I can't say the first Jewish controller.
No, I think we've had a couple. I mean, I presume, I think Liz Holtzman, Harrison Golden.
Uh-huh.
You know, I hate to judge, you know, I'm presuming, but I'm sure there are others. But look, I just want to win this election, perform well, and show the public that if I'm fortunate enough to win, that the decision to elect me was a well-founded decision.
Now, we only have a few moments left. You're one of the important constituents that we spoke about has been the Jewish community, including the subgroup, the Orthodox Jewish community. What are you doing to reach out to these groups,
the Orthodox
and the Jewish community?
Having a sequence of meetings in the important communities, the community leaders, speaking to those who are in the voices in the media who are listened to, speaking to rabbis, speaking to those who are in a position to mold and affect public opinion. That is what politics is about. Obviously, at some level, you beam TV ads down that all, you know, 8 million folks in the New York City metro area can see. But there's also a more micro and more, from my perspective, more important part of politics, which is talking to people on an individual basis.
Final question, though, is, you know, they mentioned that they looked at you as a possible Jewish president. What role does Judaism play in your life?
There is the practice of formal practice of Judaism where I attend services, not with the regularity that many others do, but I attend services, high holidays, and occasionally elsewhere during the year. The role that is most critical, and folks may not remember a little bit about my biography, my dad was raised on the Lower East Side. He was raised Orthodox, but it is a set of values that one aspires to. And as I've always said, the great thing about humanity is we, unlike any other species that I'm aware of, can aspire to values, create them, formulate them. Living up to them is harder, but we do our best.
Ellen, we appreciate you being here. We look forward to having you back and spend more time taking phone calls and reaching out and having the community speak to you. We look forward to having you very, very soon.
Look forward to that as well. Thank you so much for hosting me.
Elliot Spitzer, former governor of New York, here on the Talk Line Communications Network. He'd like to be the next controller. We're going to be back after these messages. Stay tuned.